Log Talk Radio.
Hello. Happy, happy Saturday. My name is Jenny Ward. I am your host of Live in Play. Without further ado, I'm going to jump in and talk about what I'm going to be sharing with CEO of Idea Sandbox, Paul Williams. I'm a big fan of Paul. And it's so funny, you know, you come across people in your life, and I've never met him face to face. However, I was introduced to his website through a professional colleague and was really so excited. It's like I knew immediately, I'm so glad Paul is in the world. You know, when you meet people, you're like, oh, thank goodness these people are in the world. That's how I feel about Paul. And I want you to check out his website. It is Idea, IDEA-sandbox.com. What a great name. And you can also contact him directly at Paul, P-A-U-L, at IDEA-sandbox.com. And I'm going to start with a quote that I actually found on Paul's website. And it's actually one of my favorite quotes. And it's, "Ideas come from curiosity," by Walt Disney, which is so inspiring. And I think my life and everything that I've created personally and professionally has come from that space of being curious and that what if, and just asking the question and then seeing what you can create from that. I'm going to be talking with Mr. Paul Williams, and I believe he's calling from Amsterdam. Woohoo! So hello, Paul. Are you there?
I'm here. Hey, Jenny.
Are you still in Amsterdam?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah,
I love this. Global radio.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 11:30 here, p.m.
Rock, rock on. Thank you so much.
No worries.
I really love that quote from Walt Disney.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I also want to just say thank you. I recently got your newsletter, and for those of you who are listening, I highly triple-dog dare you to sign up for Paul's e-newsletters. And I loved what you talked about with the trial run, run.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, I came across a car ad, and in the ad it said, coulda, woulda, shoulda, or did. So those are your two choices, and then the decision was did, and it was the idea was you did buy the car. And it was just a silly ad, but I looked at it, I'm thinking, you know, this is what life's about. It's this, like, coulda, woulda, shoulda, or, you know, it's like these moments where you do or don't make a choice. So, you know, I got to thinking, like, why do so many of us live coulda, woulda, shoulda lives? And it's because of risk. And so, you know, the purpose of my newsletter is to try to give people tools to help them, you know, fix problems and situations like this. And I forget where I read this idea, but so the idea is if you want to quit your job or you've got a big decision to make, let's decide we're going to have a baby or whatever it is. The idea is to pretend you're going to do it. So pretend you gave that your 2 weeks notice at your job. Now what? So what would be this need to do? But more importantly, how does it make you feel? So if you decide you're going to have kids, does it make you feel excited or are you anxious? I mean, so your body starts telling you how it feels about the decision. So it's one of those sort of tricked your gut into asking it, you know, how do you feel about this decision? So it's kind of a neat way to test something that you think is risky before actually getting into it and see how you sort of feel. But you've got to sort of go with it and pretend for a couple weeks. So
That's clay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What I love about it is that you get to feel it, and how I feel, you know, we move forward in life is experiencing things. So when you pretend, your body goes along with it, and you're actually feeling it, not thinking about it, which is more experiential and is when we begin to understand that we're in charge. We're in charge
absolutely.
Of our play here, and we can navigate based off of how it feels, you know, where we want to play next.
Yep. And
I loved it.
Thank you. Actually, and what's interesting too is as adults, and you talk about this, as adults, actually a kid could imagine something and probably figure out in their minds, but we as adults, our imagination's out of practice. So it's not enough for us to pretend and just think for a few minutes about, you know, gosh, what if I did buy that car? How would I feel?
Mm.
And you really sort of need to go through the motions to give your body that experience of it. So, yeah, very interesting.
So I'm always fascinated, and I know I've always read your site, and I've talked to you a couple times on the phone. I love your spirit. But being ways to be creative. And that word creativity is very overused. Most people either go, woohoo, and other people go, ugh, you know, especially in the business world and corporate settings, when I walk in and talk about creativity, it's not the best buzzword right now.
Yeah.
So I'm curious in your perspective on what is creativity to you, and how, what are your ways of promoting creativity with your clients?
Creativity is really drumming up new ideas or combining old ideas. The funny thing is we are creative. What to put in on your kid's sandwich this morning, or where to go for dinner, or how to make the photocopier work because the toner's, I mean, we do things every day that is creative, but we don't think of it that way. So, you know, unfortunately, creativity has been sort of, you know, you've got artists who are these daring personalities who, you know, created this elite world of creativity, and, you know, heaven forbid if you could aspire to be there or try to be there. What I try to do is to help people do realize that they are creative. And it really is just putting ideas together in different combinations. The problem is, and you talk about this, is as kids we get it. I mean, I remember moving as a kid, and I got to play with the moving boxes, and they were spaceships, they were a storefront, they could be anything you wanted them to be, but I mean, in reality, it was just, you know, cardboard. But as adults, we're taught, you know, you need to be realistic and practical and don't daydream because it's a waste of time. But that is where, by thinking the unthinkable, by imagining the theoretical, that's how new ideas come about. You know, if someone said, you know, before the airplane was invented, the light bulb, if they told the inventors that they're crazy and it's not going to happen, and they,
which I'm
they
sure
listened,
they did.
Absolutely. You know, so, you know, that's, you know, we, new ideas come from creativity and imagination. Mm. So it's a shame as adults we're sort of conditioned not to go to that sort of fantasy world because it's not mature or something like that. But the reality is that's where great ideas come from. So
where did Idea Sandbox come from for you? What inspired you to begin that?
I think like everyone, I was, you know, trying to figure out what I was good at in life, and you know, through my different business careers, just exploring. I've always been majored in PR and I public relations, and I liked that because I was able to, I like to help people, and I like having people suggest what their problems are, taking them apart and trying to put them together in different ways and helping them.
Mm.
So that was sort of what I did early on in my career. And it sort of kept popping up as a theme. And I worked at Starbucks before, in marketing at Starbucks before starting Idea Sandbox. And by the time I was getting ready to leave Starbucks, I was spending the majority of my time leading brainstorming sessions and helping people with building strategy and sort of do this out of the box thinking. And
right.
And it really was just, I sort of saw a need. I felt good at it. It was sort of, you know, like I said, I like to help people come up with ideas, and I found I'm good at drawing ideas out of other people. So Idea Sandbox is meant to be, the sandbox part is meant to keep the play in it. And, you know, there's nothing dangerous about a sandbox, and, you know, you don't like what you did, just scrub the dirt around and it's gone, so that it's nothing set in stone. So that's sort of where that came from.
I like that. What have you noticed in terms of working with different corporations or individuals? Where do you feel people get stuck? And so they say, I want to do this. And then what do you feel happens from that space? Because I do believe people are beginning to remember how to dream. I have clients that are like, I would love to. And I'm like, great. And then something happens from A to D. And I'm like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the good news is that we're realizing life is too short to not do things you're excited about or not strive to do things worth doing. So
right.
I think that's partly the trend of, heck, I'm going to learn how to skydive or, you know, whatever it is. The thing I see that happens most is lack of confidence. So we've been told for so long that, you know, creativity is this special gift that only certain people have, which is not the truth. But then the other part is fear. It could be fear of... and this is when I lead sessions and brainstorming and strategy sessions with clients, a lot of it is helping them realize that we're in a safe place and, you know, we're not making decisions today. So there's no harm in coming up with crazy ideas because It's not like the money is being spent or resources allocated towards it. It's fear of looking stupid in front of your peers. You know, I think going against the system can feel dangerous, especially, you know, if your boss is sitting in the room with you. So honestly, it's insecurity of I'm not creative. And I think really a lot of it is fear but once you get a group of people sort of in the groove, you break them free, you let them know that, all right, it's okay. And, you know, there's permission. Yeah, absolutely.
That's one thing I've discovered just by going in and really making a fool out of myself on purpose. Is the moment I do that, it sets them free. And they don't have to be doing what I'm doing. But it's just a statement and like, hey, you know, it's okay. And that's what I have found, and I'm glad that you're talking about it, is because people are very, very concerned with looking stupid or doing it wrong. And there's this idea that if I say this, I didn't do it right. And in curiosity, there's no such thing as right. You know, it just is. Yep. So that's interesting. I also love you talk about childlike, not childish.
Yes.
What does that mean to you?
I'm pretty sure I found that somewhere. You know, they say there are no new ideas, and so, you know, I'm combining old ones. But there's a difference, I think. For a while, brainstorming meant eat candy and goof around and play with Nerf footballs and, you know, have Play-Doh and Silly Putty. And so I guess the good news there is that we knew that it needed to be something slightly different than stuffy work.
Yes.
But I think criticism started to form because it seemed like this is not the best use of people's time. People are just being childish. So being immature for the sake of being immature is not what's productive. So to get to what you're asking is being childlike, that is letting your mind wander, coming up with ideas that are impossible, you know, dreaming the undreamable. That's what being childlike is about. Childish is lack of maturity and selfishness and things like that. So as adults, to let yourself be childlike is important because that's sort of what opens up. I just read the book. What's the name of it? POW by Andy Nolman. It's about surprise marketing.
Yeah.
And he mentions how at Disneyland, at Disney World, we're all kids. And it may take a few minutes or a few hours, but eventually we all break down and we let ourselves enjoy it. We become kids again. Mm. And so, you know, how do you sort of get people? And then that's when we're the most vulnerable. That's when we're the most creative. That's when we let things happen. So, you know, what I try to do with people is how can I get them to that point where it's safe and they're protected and it's okay to be kooky, because from that will come some neat stuff.
I've also, I mean, just by observing children and my own child, I'm always fascinated with the lack of, there's no judgment. There's just, when you're in that childlike space, like she was dropping things all the time, my daughter, and she's like, oh, I'm having a droppy day. But it wasn't like, oh, my gosh, I'm dropping things, and I'm so bad, and I shouldn't be carrying things anymore. You know what I mean? It just is. There was no anything from that space, and that's being childlike. It's not It's continuing to move forward, trying it a different way. Yeah, I'm always amazed, even at my own limitations, where I stop my wonder. I mean, and I teach this for a living, but, you know, I'm like, oh, all the realistic expectations start coming in, and I don't know if you would agree with me, but I do think we're out of balance in our culture. Even professionally and personally, we're very, we've gone the opposite extreme, and we don't even allow ourselves to dream for a moment, and we get caught into our agendas.
Yeah, I mean, we're trained it's not productive, and you know, what good is it, you know, what good will come of it, and, you know, but I think you've got the flip side, which is the power of positive thinking, the power of now, those type of concepts, which is, you know, you put that out there and it will come. So I'm hoping the challenge though is that there's this sort of spreadsheet mentality and the finger paint mentality. It's and to get those two to work together.
Yes.
Is the challenge. You know, it's like, it can't be both. It has to be one or the other. And, I'm looking for somewhere in between.
Yeah, I agree, because we all have it in us, I believe. Yeah. It's the yin and the yang within us.
Yep.
You know, I'm not just running around doing cartwheels all the time, even, you know, like, I think we both have both sides of us, and we need to begin to integrate them more. Explain what you do with a typical client in terms of what would be the sandbox brainstorming space. What would that look like or feel like? I know it's probably very individual for whoever you're working with, but how would you go about helping people brainstorm?
Actually, it's interesting because, and maybe this is pulling back the curtain, but actually I'll do a slight side road here. I want to write a book about creativity.
Mm.
But there are a million books out there about creativity, and
right.
the topic's been pretty well covered. And it seems like the only sort of way to write a new book might be to come up with new names for old things and brand them the, you know, idea sandbox method and things like that. But the problem with that is I'm contributing to making people think that there's this magic behind it, and it's not. It's common goods. It's out there. It's the process that's out there. So what I do with clients is the same thing that anyone can do. I use basic creative problem-solving techniques of,
okay.
you know, identifying the problem, brainstorming solutions, help choose the best approach, and that's just a generic creative problem-solving method. But a lot of people don't have that tool. I mean, it's
I agree.
Generic, but a lot of people don't have it or don't use it.
In terms of identifying the problem, I mean, everybody has a perception on what the quote-unquote problem could be. I mean,
yeah,
that's interpersonal. Too. It's professional and interpersonal. It's like your problem is different from the other person's problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could imagine that part being very interesting.
No, it is. That is the biggest challenge because, in fact, when I mentioned earlier working in PR in the beginning of my career, you know, you'd have a church come to you and wanting to have a bake sale to raise money to fix the roof. And by
mm-hmm.
the time you finish the conversation, it's not about a bake sale. It's about attracting more parishioners. It's a much bigger thing, and you know, having a bake sale is only going to solve something temporary. It's a bigger issue that they have, and so that to me is a challenge to listen to what is being said, listen to the needs, and then also sort of helping this take a step back and assess the situation, see what is the root of the issue, you know.
Right.
So while I use the same tools, to your point, it is individual. Because every group has its own dynamic, every company has its own culture, and so you know the solution is going to be
diverse.
The solution is going to be a different combination of existing solutions, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I also read it on your site, and correct me if I didn't.
If it sounds smart, I'm going to say it was.
Yeah, that was totally my site.
you
put problem solving. You put problem, and then in. You put opportunity, because I view problems as opportunities as well. I think in society we're conditioned, it's like, oh, problem, and there's this negative undertone to quote-unquote problems, and there are always opportunities to know more about yourself, about what you're doing, what the company's doing. I mean, do you find that perspective is growing, that people are embracing problems, or are they still stifled by them?
No, I mean, problem isn't a dirty word. It really isn't. And I think by sugarcoating it, by calling it an opportunity, which, I mean, it's as long as you understand that something is broken and needs to be fixed, that's the challenge. You can call
right.
it anything you want, but, you know,
right.
my business card, I bill myself as a creative problem solver. And I wonder if, well, gosh, are people not going to call me because calling me means they have to admit they have a problem, and is that a barrier to, you know,
right.
calling ideas sandbox? But you could use buzzwords and things like that, and you know, opportunity is a fine word, but if you don't admit that something needs to be fixed, then you may never actually fix it.
So true.
Making it sound sweeter than it is, I don't think is necessarily a good thing. So
you can call it whatever you want. I think we have a tendency to just put Band-Aids on stuff as opposed to saying, okay, what is really going on?
Absolutely. Yep.
Enough of the Band-Aids.
Yes.
So if I came to you and I wanted to set my business apart, I mean, is that how you inspire people? Like, hey, I want to be – there's 20 people doing this, but I want to be different. Is that where creativity will come into play, you feel, with your work with clients?
Absolutely. I focus on helping people to be remarkable, helping businesses to be remarkable, and that means – you know, worth remarking about, and how do you stand apart from your competition? It is a challenge to do because it's not it's easy to sort of fit with what everybody else is doing.
Right.
And the biggest challenge comes when a company truly isn't doing something all that different than somebody else. It just happens to be a different group of people doing the same thing.
Right.
And so in some instances, companies need to find I'll even rewind. What it often ends up being is that the company is too broad. They're not specific enough. They're not specialized enough.
Right.
What are ways to stand apart from your competition? Is it by providing better service or better product or better whatever? There's many levers to get there. And it's a challenge. But there are some great tools out there. There are some great books out there. So how do you sort of, I think the there's a great book called Why Johnny Can't Brand and by Bill Schley. He does a great job of helping you say, okay, if you're in X business, and how do you look at it as a deeper category, deeper category, deeper category? So you're not just a hotel or a five-star hotel, because there are many of those. How do you take it to that next level to be, we're the five-star boutique hotel that has every room is individual and themed differently or something. So that becomes what sets you apart. That's what makes it unique and worth talking about and worth checking out.
I'm always fascinated. I think you're brilliant at this. But just as personal for me, I've always kind of been challenged because, teaching play, there's a lot of people that teach play, and I'm grateful for that because the world really needs it, so the more the better. But I think for me it's always been, okay, where do I go mainstream and do the things that are quote-unquote necessary, and then where don't I? Because there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it my own way or create my own thing. And so it's an interesting fine line when you want to set yourself apart, but then it's not mainstream, so people don't get it. Does that make, am I making any sense? It's like, what is she doing? That's weird. Like, you should have this, this, and this, and this. And maybe I'm just not a conformist or a rebel at heart, but I'm like, that doesn't feel good. I just think it's an interesting dance as a business owner with where you stay mainstream and where you decide to play different. And, you have to take the chance that people won't get it.
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing right there is the definition of what sets you apart. The thing that you want to do that's not mainstream, that's probably, if you've explored that deeper, or any company, that is what is probably what makes you different and makes you stand out from the competition.
Right.
A good way to sort of think about that or try to get there is, so maybe you are one of, I'm a marketing consultant. There are a bajillion marketing consultants. How do I do what I do different? There's a lot of people who say be remarkable or stand out. How do I, it could be I focus on a specific customer base. So, I only do it for restaurants could be the way I do it. And so then I become the restaurant remarkability expert or, so that's part of it too, is you specialize to the point where
the niche.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Well, also for you, I mean, I'm not just saying this because you're on my radio show, but it's your personality.
Oh, go on.
Well, you're like, sure, tell me more.
No.
Sure.
Go on.
No, seriously. No, if I were to call you, I believe we feel people. So I think that's also what sets people apart is we resonate with different types of personalities. So I think you're a very open, communicative, playful person, and people immediately probably trust you, and that sets you apart. I think we can get so consumed with being in the mainstream, this is what I've noticed, and conforming so much that we lose actually our greatest asset, which is who we are.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, too, you say that. I write for my blog and do posts a couple times a week, and it took a while for me to get in the groove because you sort of have to get comfortable with yourself as a business person or a professional or whatever it is, to sort of find your voice, to feel comfortable. For a while, I was trying to write like other sites and be what other sites were. And I'm to the point now where, my English teacher would probably be upset with my punctuation and grammar, but I have a style now that I'm comfortable with. And I don't think it's a signature style per se, but I'm comfortable now and I've got that voice. So I think.
And I feel it when I read your, I feel that.
That's great. Yeah.
And I think so that's what I think that's important, is for people to remember that aspect of it.
Absolutely. To be who they are and find their own voice and not be someone else. In the end, it's going to be so much work to try to fake being someone else. Come back to who you are, the most authentic person you can be. So,
What company do you think is getting it right in terms of like really setting the bar, stepping outside the box, playing really cool, creating a new standard. Do you feel there's any individual or company that's sort of creating a new wave for us?
You know, it's a trick question because
I know.
It's funny. When I worked at Starbucks, as successful as Starbucks was, and this is pre sort of the recession challenges and things like that, they were looking towards Whole Foods Market and Krispy Kreme and some of these other companies. And it's interesting that and since that Whole Foods, not that they were in trouble, but you know, they're during an acquisition, they were having challenges, and I think they're still a great brand.
Right.
Krispy Kreme went from being old school Southern donuts to mainstream and had some challenges financially. It's hard to see companies who can stick in it for the long term and stay strong.
I agree.
So it's not that they're a flash in the pan, but companies, it seems like they try to get so big so quickly, they lose their focus on their customers and focus more on Wall Street. And I don't know, that's a whole different call-in program, I guess. But no, I'm a big fan of Apple.
I am too.
For example, I think they do a great job.
Yep.
Things move so quickly now and so dynamically. Technology seems like it's pretty exciting as a category. And it'll be interesting to see, too, with a different administration, how health is changing. And it's a really sort of a shifty, squishy time right now. But
it is.
I've avoided answering your question.
But I liked your answer. It was
great. Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the time where I can be sitting with my daughter and be like, isn't it great that companies do what they do because they care about the customers?
Yeah.
I'm really excited for that, and play and really care about sustainability. I mean, I think we talk a lot about that, but I was curious if you think there's a company actually doing it yet. I don't feel like there is, but I think we're going to have to eventually, and that's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
so,
I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm a little challenged because I'm living in a country where I ride a bike, and the electric mass transit system is powered by the energy generated by burning the trash.
Wow.
Here in Amsterdam, yeah, and it's like, you know, they don't have space for a landfill, so they burn it clean, and it powers the trams. I was thinking about this the other day about, you know, Americans are being pushed and pressured to, as individuals, sort of find a way to, you know, be green. But I can ride a bike because there are bike lanes. They just took one of the main roads here that was four lanes, two cars, you know, each direction, and made it one car each direction and put in bike lanes. So, nothing as a citizen, I'm able to be green here because the environment allows me to be green. And so I was thinking about, gosh, you know, I don't want to blame the government or challenge a government, but the whole system is set up that it works this way.
Absolutely.
So anyway, slight tangent, but.
But a good one.
Thanks.
So explain to me asset-based. What does that mean to you?
Oh, yeah. Asset-based thinking. So this is an idea by a woman named Kathy Kramer and Hank Wozniak. They wrote a book called Change the Way You See Everything.
I love that book.
Yeah, I bumped into this book several years ago when it was first published. And so this book basically is the introduction to this asset-based thinking. So growing up, I was sort of picked on for having a optimistic perspective. In fact, Pollyanna was a term often people used, and that's someone who's unrealistically optimistic. I never liked it because it's not a dreamy state. Asset-based thinking is, it's making the best of what you have versus dwelling on what is lacking.
Love that.
Because there may be a chance that what is lacking will never come about.
Right.
In fact, I think if you've ever read the book, Now Discover Your Strengths, that sort of has an asset-based philosophy in that if you're not good at math, then you may never be good at math. So don't focus on developing your weakness. Focus on leveraging your strengths. And so that's what asset-based thinking really is.
Love it.
Is how can you find what's working and leverage it? And so I read this book. I'm like, this is it. This is the language to describe the way I've bumped into other people, the way we think. It's not unrealistic or you know, p- pixie dust thinking, this is a real way of looking at things. All right, this is what I've got. Let's make the best of it. So
Didn't they state something about, I'm paraphrasing, I might not get it right, but it's something like forget perfection and pursue progress.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I love. I think that's a bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yeah, I highly recommend reading that book. And it's great because it's not just the glass is half full mentality. It's not magic. It requires work, but I just can't say enough about good stuff.
So what are you doing in Amsterdam?
Well,
are you playing?
Absolutely.
Great.
Although not the way that most people jump to when they hear of Amsterdam.
I had a visual there, but I won't describe it.
I will say this. The red light district is only a couple blocks big. It would be the equivalent of saying, let's go find Little Italy or the Chinatown in some other city.
Oh, wow.
It's a very small percentage of what this town is about. So I'm actually with my partner who works for Starbucks. She does marketing for Starbucks. Yep, yep. So the roasting plant is here for Europe for Starbucks. So, yeah.
What's the feel there in terms of the difference between working there compared to America? What's their work-life, quote-unquote, perspective there? I'm just curious.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it'll force me to generalize, but people here have a pretty good work-life balance.
Right.
They sort of know when to punch out of the clock and when to sort of... Americans are just really known to be go-getters and to maximize time. And I don't think other countries are lazy, but I just think our...
Different.
Yeah, we get ourselves in such a swirl of needing to do so much, and I don't know. It's we've got so much convenience in the U.S. too, which is when I come back to visit, some of it's really great. I equate living in Amsterdam to living in New York from a perspective of you can still go to the corner bakery, the grocery store is small, and there's only two choices of toothpaste versus
Love it.
Yeah, Target's got, like a hundred different kinds of toothpaste to choose from, which is great. But, I think once you get used to a narrower selection, at the beginning you sort of might feel gypped, but it's okay. It really is okay.
It's so okay. Yeah. It's simple is better. So how do you feel? What's your way of drawing ideas out of people? Because I'm just curious, because that seems to be, for me, a very challenging part of the work that I do is really getting them to get to that point of saying, I like this, I like this. And then, how long does it take you to get that? Do you find that sometimes clients don't get there? Because drawing ideas out of people is really giving them permission.
Yeah.
And that's, as you said, they have to feel very safe. But what have you noticed in terms of people's blockages or reactions to that or anything that you were surprised about?
Actually, the biggest challenge typically is, and I love this phrase, is the curse of knowledge. And this is a term that Chip Heath and Dan Heath came up with in their book Made to Stick. And the curse of knowledge is you're so close to your product, you forget what it was like to be ignorant or, like a customer who doesn't know all the intricacies. In fact, you'll hear a lot of companies say, what we really need is an education program. If we can just get the customers to understand, blah, blah, blah. That's like, I just want people to understand how much work I've put into this product, and if they understood it, they would love it. So what I end up doing is, I'll use Starbucks as an example. So Starbucks wants to find a way to get the employees engaged around whole bean coffee. So they sell whole bean coffee in the store, but there's a lot of choices. How do they sell it to customers, blah, blah, blah. So most Starbucks partners, which is what they call employees, most Starbucks partners can taste the subtle taste differences between one type of coffee and another.
Right.
Whereas most customers, we add cream and sugar and could never tell the difference besides we're not making two pots of different kinds of Starbucks and going, this is spicy, this has got grapefruit. So I take them out of, before we even start, let's not talk about coffee. In fact, with Starbucks, I did an exercise where we talked about wine, and so you're going to a party tonight, picking up a bottle of wine. It's Italian food. What wine do you? But I even found that a little too complicated, and said, "All right, you're on your way over. You're on your way home tonight, and your significant other said pick up some bread for dinner. You're at Whole Foods. You're looking at the bread aisle. What do you buy?
Yep.
So, long story short, what it comes down to is You want fresh and tasty and crisp. You don't really care about the sourdough or if it's
right.
wine. You know, it's like what goes good with spaghetti. You know, can you
right.
have French loaf with spaghetti? You know, so what I end up doing is finding a metaphor or finding something that's seemingly unassociated with what we're talking about. We frame up, okay, so if people want fresh and hot and tasty, well, then right, let's apply that back to coffee. And that's what your customers are looking for. So tell them what foods this coffee goes with, or tell them this is a morning coffee, this is an evening. You know, so that has really helped us to sort of
simplify.
Try to find ways around that curse of knowledge to understand the challenge.
Well, also just putting yourself in their shoes because
absolutely.
You can get
yeah.
like a role play where, you know, we don't need to be educated on what the beans were. We want good coffee. I want caffeine, you know, that's pretty
yeah,
much
yeah. Absolutely.
I want to
yep.
wake up, please. Thanks.
Yeah. Hot caffeine.
I'll take
yep.
a small thanks. Well, Paul,
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
really glad you stayed up till midnight to talk with me. I'm really honored.
No worries.
Thank you so much.
Great.
And for all of you listening, you can check out IDEA-sandbox.com. And I highly encourage you to also join his newsletter. It's great, awesome, informative information, highly fun and playful. And Paul is the real deal. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, have fun.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you all for joining Live in Play. Once again, my name is Jenny Ward, and you can check out my website, www.playward.com, or Mama, M-O-M-M-A, play.com. If you feel like calling in and sharing the last couple of minutes about what creativity is for you, or curiosity, or any ideas that inspire you from this conversation, feel free to call in at 646-200-0865. Have an awesome rockin' day. Peace out.